Oh, that's right. Good afternoon. How you doing every day, everybody? Hey, I am here with Chad Kinsella. He is a professor over at Lander University in the political science department. And I tell you what, there's no better person to talk to, no better person that loves politics the way Chad does, and probably should have waited another day because he probably stayed up all night watching the elections. But how you doing today, Chad?
I am very well, and that is very true. My wife finally made me come to bed at 1 o'clock, and she still does not understand why I was up so late looking at all this. Again, this is kind of, I guess, why I'm in the business. It's a lot of fun to look at.
You're a political junkie?
Yeah, I am. I've always been a political junkie, so it makes sense to kind of study it as well.
Now, you've also, for those that don't know you, you've actually worked on some political campaigns.
It has been a while ago, but I did work on some political campaigns, kind of cut my teeth in some races in northern Kentucky, so outside of Cincinnati. So, yes, I've worked on some campaigns.
See? So Fox has nothing on me, folks. That's right. I've got my own political consultant right here this afternoon.
I have been yelled at. I have been nipped by a dog, and I've been chased. And all kinds of, when you go door to door, you'll meet some very nice people, and then some people are not very happy to see you and their dogs.
That's right. And, you know, not only that, the strategy that it takes to try to win a campaign, there is so much behind the scenes that goes on, not only in strategizing where to advertise and how to raise money and all this type of thing, but how to make that candidate say the right things at the right time.
Yes, and again, there's basically, you know, and one of the things the RNC their Senate campaign and congressional campaign, they invite candidates out there. I was reading about it today and kind of schooled them on how to do things, because I mean, they had some, if you think about 2010, some of the people who had seismic collapses, thinking of, you know, Sharon Angle in Nevada. And, you know, the candidate in Missouri talking, you know, about rape and what, so just, you know, these people.
Oh, yeah, you can't get pregnant, you know, if you're raped, right?
Yes, yes.
The body doesn't make sure it doesn't happen, right?
Catastrophic collapses. And again, you probably should never go there. So again, I think they've taken a renewed interest because of those catastrophic collapses that happened, in 2010 to make sure that those candidates do say the right thing. So there are people who are with them that do make sure, you know, they're very well coached on how to portray themselves and what to do.
You know, that would kind of bring up a question about, do we think that Vincent Shaheen's comment about that bad comment about Governor Haley could have hurt him, even though he apologized? But for those that saw the longer clip of it, I honestly think that Vincent Shaheen was serious when he said that.
I think so, and that's one of the things that you have to watch. And I remember when we went with you know, the candidates that I was working for, you have to watch and be prepared, because candidates get tired. Candidates kind of get in front of a group of supporters and they kind of feel invincible, and they'll say things off the cuff that go off kind of the prepared, kind of polished statements. And, you know, anymore, it's very easy to capture. So, you know, when that happens, it's kind of, you have to go into damage control, and you try to stop candidates from making such comments where that could hurt them. And again, so he was, I think, down already. I don't think that helped. Again, coming from a party that had talked so much about the war on women, That's making a remark like that does not perhaps sit well.
Does not endear you to all those that were your supporters, I would think.
If you're going to talk about the war on women and then make such a comment that does not smack of, you're not being very
true,
not holding true to your
beliefs,
to your supposed beliefs. Yes, so that can be very problematic.
Exactly. So, you know, here in South Carolina, talking about the races and everything, it seemed very right down the line, anywhere from 35 to maybe 38% for Democratic candidates, and anywhere from 58 to 65%, except in a race, of course, like Curtis Loftus, who was the only candidate, you know, he got 99% of the vote. But other than that, they did just seem to break right down party lines.
Yes, I think it's really interesting. And I was looking at Ohio. So I have some friends who work in campaigns in Ohio, and it was really interesting. You kind of see the same things almost by the same numbers, even Ohio being kind of a more seen as a purple state. So, yeah, it really fell down, to to just basically party line, and it was very pretty consistent across, you know, how people did. So I mean, if there was an anti-incumbent mood in the country, it was not felt here. Again, so everybody, there was very little change in South Carolina, statewide and locally for that matter. You know, many of the people who had been in the position before, you know, remained easily, I would say, with that.
Right. So, but I thought that was very interesting from that standpoint.
It looks as if, you know, Democratic turnout perhaps was low, or enthusiasm was clearly low. It just, again, if looking at some of the polls, I had and many people had anticipated probably a very close race between Shaheen and Haley. It really never materialized. It had always been Haley was up consistently by double digits, and those polls seemed very correct. And again, if you can't excite at the top of the ticket, there are consequences lower down the ticket, and you can kind of see that, you know, across, you know. Democrats getting somewhere around no more than 40%, and Republicans getting beyond 60%. So I mean, very clear victories across the board.
Sure. Now, what do you think as far as Tom Irwin? You know, I think that I interviewed him afterwards he pulled out of the race, and he said that, you know, he had thrown his support. And I said, but you said you had problems with him. Why would you do that? And literally, he told me he was the lesser of two evils. Why endorse anybody at all would be my question.
Well, who was it? There was someone who said, you know, there was an interview, I think this was in 2010, I can't remember who it was with, but it was kind of like, you know, if you vote for the lesser of two evils, it's still evil. So,
well, he wanted to drain the swamp of corruption down there. I mean, he made all these comments and everything. I brought this up to him. I said, Tom, this is what you wanted to do. And he goes... And even on campaign reform, ethics, he was in the last debate that they did. He called out Governor Haley. He called out Vincent Shaheen for taking money that they should not have taken. It's a loophole. They can take it, but they should not have taken it. I said, have you had a come to Jesus moment with Vincent Shaheen on this?
Well, yes, it's... well, the money thing is... it's tough. It's very tough to compete.
Well, I think in the end, he had very little effect on the race. I think he got, 116 votes here in Greenwood. I mean, this isn't for the whole state, but he got 116 votes, and which was very, very small overall. I don't really see where he helped Vincent. And when I asked him if he would be campaigning, since he said he had thrown him his support, he said he would not be campaigning with him. So what does that tell you?
Kind of washed his hands. It's tough to, you know, even when you have kind of these endorsements, and I can't remember, there was a instance, maybe it was in Maryland, where a third party, somebody who was a Republican ran as a conservative and threw his support to the Republican. It was kind of like I wonder how much effect it really has. And again, as much as we like to say, and as Americans, we like to say that we're independent, typically, you know, we vote along party lines, even though we don't like to admit it.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just thought that was interesting as far as his lambasting and the amount of money that he put in, not only of his own money, but the amount of money that he borrowed. And I even tried to ask him, is the Democratic Party going to pick up some of the tab on your bills here?
No.
No,
I'm pretty sure.
He didn't say they would. But usually there is some type of quid pro quo, isn't it?
In some case, if you have a party, and it's a lot easier if you get elected.
It's very much easier when you get elected.
One of the things that, Hillary Clinton did it. My former boss, he won in 2004, and he had borrowed over $100,000 to finish out the campaign in order to have the commercials and everything that he needed to win. And it's kind of like you have fundraisers, but it's to pay off the debt.
Right.
So, and you can do that even if you lose, but it's a little bit harder to kind of find people willing to give.
And Tom Irwin, it would be very difficult because he gave up the race.
Yes, it is going to be really difficult. Probably, I have a feeling he's not going to find anyone lining up to pay him back for these incurred expenses. The party needs. well, they will say that they need the money, and it's difficult to kind of, you know, have these fundraisers if you did not win,
exactly,
to attract people to want to pay for that.
Well, but we all know that Hillary Clinton and her lovely husband Bill left the White House broke, right?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Yes,
of course
we do.
They did. Yeah.
All right. Hey, I'm here with Chad Kinsella. We're going to have a good time talking politics here. Hey, if you got a question or something you want to throw in here, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right. Hey, we're back here. We're having a good time talking. You know, I think Chad really enjoys this political speak, having an opportunity to put it out there. Don't you, Chad?
I do very much. My wife is she grows tired within 5 minutes. So it's good to kind of talk about politics. It doesn't get to happen as often as I would like.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we appreciate you coming out here today. You know, one of the things that I was wondering about, you know, Eric Cantor lost his race to the econ professor, and I didn't know. Do you know, did he win? Did the economics professor, the one that had, what, $30,000 or $40,000, no real money, did he win?
I'm pretty sure that he did win, and I have to go back and check, but I remember I was looking through all of the House races. When I went through Virginia, I saw, you know, the Democrats and Republicans all held. So and that would have been really big news had he lost. But again, if you look in that Richmond, it's kind of the Richmond suburbs, it's a very Republican area. So I would bet a lot of money that he did win. And again, that was an that's one of the great upsets that will be talked about for a long time to come, I think.
Well, that gives everybody hope that they could actually do it, because he didn't spend that much money, $40,000, something like that?
It was very little money, not well known. He kind of ran as a Tea Party guy, but he wasn't, you know, fully endorsed. You know, he's an economics professor, so... that one defies all of the what we know about elections. You have a well-funded, well-known, the majority leader of the House of Representatives. You know, money, he raised tons of money. He had every Republican counts as his leadership PAC and millions of dollars. This guy should have been untouchable, yet he got beaten. So again, it's kind of, you know, maybe.
Why did he get beat?
You know, there has been a lot of speculation, and there have been a lot of people who've kind of looked at it. Some of the arguments is that he kind of lost touch with the district, perhaps. And, you know, and you almost saw it in Virginia last night, there gets to a point, a level of comfort. You can, and again, those districts are drawn in such a way, again, it's a Republican district. It should have been a safe district. Conventional wisdom says that he should have easily won the primary and the general election. And, you know, probably what I think probably happened is, you know, just got too comfortable and assumed that everything was going to be fine. And you had somebody, you know, who worked very hard and, you know, knocked on the right doors and kind of, you know, made that kind of outsider, argument that you know, people like, I'm not, you know, I'm a normal person and I'm not from Washington, and he's gone Washington. And, you know, if enough people listen, primaries can be kind of an odd thing. Again, in the case with him, he probably just was probably a little too comfortable, a little careless, and
I understand he just wasn't in the district. He wasn't connected or listening to what the people in the district were interested in.
And you can see that. Senator Dole from North Carolina, when Kay Hagan beat her, one of the arguments was she was never in the district. And it's kind of, you know, where is she? Pat Roberts, as we were just talking about in Kansas, almost lost because, again, never felt that it was his duty to go back to Kansas.
Only goes back to Kansas when it's election time, I understand. Yes.
And, you know,
and yet he still pulled it out impressively.
Well, he had some help. They rolled out. Bob Dole came back again, even in his
90s. Bob Dole is 91, folks. That's right.
But that is a man who knows Kansas politics. And he went, you know, Pat Roberts should thank Bob Dole. I think the National Republicans Senate Committee put it basically had him fire his entire staff, sent in people that had, you know, kind of saved him at the last minute.
Put so a real ground game on it.
He had to, because he was very isolated and ignored.
He should have dressed up as Dorothy and clicked his heels with some red slippers on and said, "There's no place like home. Oh, there's no place like home."
He was that close. To, he was going to be a permanent resident again in Kansas, very, very nearly.
Yeah.
That he really did pull that out in the last minute. So, but yeah, it goes back, you know, general election, but yeah, the primaries are kind of an odd thing. You never, and it depends upon also the system that you have. I was thinking back, I was reading about McDaniels in Mississippi. And again, you know, he won originally or had, you know, the plurality of votes. They had to go to a runoff, as Mississippi and many southern states do. And he lost, and again, one of the things that happened is you had a lot of African Americans, most likely Democrats in the western part of the state, showed up and voted, you know, for the incumbent. So primaries are a really odd thing, and it also depends upon how the primary works and to who can win.
Well, you know, it looks like we are going to have a runoff down there. Mary Landau and her opponent are going to go to a runoff. That's supposed to be coming up, what, December 6th. With the push, with so many Republicans getting in, one of the things they were talking about on TV is that it may be a plus for the Republican candidate, because would you rather have a Republican candidate a senator, or would you rather have a Democratic senator when you already know the layout of the Senate?
You know, I would, and I could be wrong,
okay,
but I would count that. In the if you look, there was the other major, the other person who got a lot of votes in that race was another Republican,
mm-hmm.
and I think he pulled somewhere around 12 or 15%. And I don't think that those voters, it's very unlikely that those people who voted for the other Republican are going to turn around and vote for a Democrat. And again, Landry only pulled in what 42-43%. I would say her days are numbered. Well, I think we can count down to December 6th.
Okay.
I would bet money that she's also going to be one of the casualties of this election period. It is very likely that will be another pickup for the Republicans.
Absolutely.
I would be shocked if she were able to keep that seat. I think.
Do you think they would put a lot? Well, now, do you think the Democratic Party would put a lot of money into that race?
I'm sure that they might put some. I'm sure they might do some polling and kind of take a quick look and see. My thought is probably not very much, because the Senate has already decided, and I think her.
So
odds,
one more person doesn't make a difference.
Not really. It's a long shot. I think
is
the problem. It's kind of throwing, you know, good money after bad type of deal. I don't see her being able to pull it out. I think that her only chance was to win this. Louisiana has a very kind of this very odd, you know, they call it a jungle primary, a blanket primary. It's kind of like everybody runs, and you can have multiple Democrats, Republicans, and you have to get over 50%. Otherwise, the top two vote getters go in December, in this case, December 6th. So, you know, she's going to be head to head now with a Republican, and I just don't see how she can pull together enough votes to do that. I think her only chance was to get over 50% in that. Ultimately, it's kind of a primary instead of the general,
right?
And that did not happen. So I am fairly certain that she will, that will be another seat that will flip over to the Republicans.
And what about the Kay Hagan and Tillis there in North Carolina? I'm telling you what, I've never seen so many ads for North Carolina right here in South Carolina. Of course, they're all right there on the border, I understand, but still, my gosh.
If I went on YouTube or any of those other, I mean, I saw more commercials. It was insane. I mean, that was, I think, I can't remember if it was one of the most, if not the most expensive elections in history. I mean, it was amazing the amount of money that was pumped into North Carolina to try to get, you know, defend that seat.
And how about President Obama coming on in the very last week with her in an ad to try to cement the vote?
You know, I don't know. There's been a lot of discussion about Obama. You know, could his face have helped in some instances or not? You know, that will be interesting. I, ultimately one of the things that Republicans kept on saying is make this about Obama, make this nationalize it. Oh, everything is about Obama. So, I don't know.
And yet the Democrats said this is not about President Obama. Hey, we're going to have to break right here. It's time for South Carolina Radio News. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery here with Chad Kinsella. He is a professor of political science over there at Lander University. We love sitting down with him. We love having your students come over and talk to us, too. Boy, that's sometimes an interesting conversation, Chad.
Yes, it is. And I know that they all love that. That's many of them, some of them have graduated, and many of them kind of, you know, that was one of their highlights of their time at Lander University was coming over. That is a very nice thing. We'll have to do it again soon.
We'll have to do that again, yes. Maybe we'll give the Republicans 2 or 3 months to get back in and then see how they're doing. You know, I think that's one of the big questions. I think the Republicans have been given a chance. Now, what they do with this chance will be very interesting. Don't you agree?
Yes, that's kind of the million-dollar question. I think it
back
was
in the day we used to say that's the $64,000 question. Right now, it's the million-dollar question.
Inflation. Yes, it was somebody. You know, the campaign is kind of the easy part. Governance is very, very difficult, and this is going to be very tricky because President Obama is still there. He's threatened to use. Executive power. Yes, he's ready to go with kind of executive orders, and the Republicans have to be smart and careful how they deal with this, because in the past, government shutdowns, if one time didn't do it in the 90s, they've done it again. That does not endear people to them. So governance is very key, and they have to be very careful and sophisticated how they handle these situations, because this is still a very high stakes game, and if they look like the obstructionists to the President Obama, that could hurt them leading up to 2016. So
isn't that amazing that here we are, we're already talking about 2016, right, and what the effect of if they don't do a good job, they'll be on the short end of the stick next time.
Politics is a never-ending game, so they have to be very, very careful, and Congress is not very popular, and so they really have to, they own Congress, so, right. Now when people think of how much they don't like Congress, they're going to start thinking of Republicans, so they need to bump that number up, they need to be seen as doing something.
What do you think the possibility is of them doing something for the good of our country, and not, annihilating Obama at the same time, President Obama, by, getting them to work together towards something?
There are a lot of possibilities, and I was very intrigued when Mitch McConnell came out and said, I don't think President Obama, he didn't wake up this morning and change his mind on how he sees the world, and neither have I, but it's like, we have to do something.
Right.
Or, otherwise, it cannot, we have a two-party system, but it cannot simply be just, continuous fighting.
The party of no. It cannot remain the party of no.
It cannot be the party of no. I'm sure that they will push through some legislation. And it was interesting. I can't remember what it was, like the a more liberal leaning online paper. They talked about what is scary is that the president and Republicans could actually work together. And they had talked about some of the things. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I said, you were so angry that they're not. But anyway, it's like there are some free trade agreements that are out there that the president has negotiated and is pushing that could make it through. So they may end up working. We'll see. And there's some kind of, Senator Cruz from Texas, I think, I'm sure somewhere in Texas he is sharpening his axe right now, because I have a feeling that he has not pledged that he will vote for Senator McConnell for majority leader, and he's been mentioned as a possibility in 2016. This could be something that he could use to kind of perhaps maybe grandstand is maybe the word. Maybe that's too harsh, but so.
I think we could say that Cruz is a grandstander.
I mean, yeah. I showed my class kind of, you know, when he read, Sam I Am on the Senate floor when he was kind of doing a de facto filibuster. So,
right.
You know, so it will be interesting to see what happens. And I don't think President Obama and Mitch McConnell have ever really gotten along. And I think, you know,
have they ever had the opportunity to actually sit down and talk, though, would be my question.
And I think that is like, and I think what was it, President Obama at one point says, like, do you want to go out and have a drink with Mitch McConnell? It's kind of like, he's not a fun guy. He's not somebody who is in
well, what about Harry Reid? Let's talk here now, folks.
Yeah. he might be interesting to have a conversation. You know, who knows what he'll say.
We're talking about Harry Reid.
About Harry. Yes. Who knows?
Have we heard anything from Harry since all this happened?
He's been fairly quiet. I think he issued some sort of a statement and probably very half-heartedly congratulated Mitch McConnell and all that. But
is he taking all the bills that he put on that were in his desk and has he burned them? Is my question, though, so that they cannot come forth.
Perhaps. Well, one of the big things is he changed the rules in the Senate for nominations. They have a very small window of opportunity now. They really have. I think he's going to be very active here soon. They have to push through all of those judicial and other nominations that the president needs and wants, because once Republicans do take over, party's over, I think. So that will be something that he'll be working on. But he's been fairly quiet here recently for I guess, fairly obvious reasons.
One of the things that I was curious, would President Obama, and I actually talked to, Congressman Trey Gowdy about this, would the President Obama try to pardon and tell people, go ahead and plead guilty, I'll pardon you for the IRS and all these people?
That is a possibility.
Trey Gowdy says it's not a good possibility, but, you know, I could see it happening, folks.
You never know. Politics is strange. You know, it's maybe not a good, you're probably right, not a good possibility. I mean, anything is possible. I think that the House, Trey Gowdy especially, has been investigating several different things. Now, you know, with the Senate, you know, these things can pick up. You know, I think Attorney General Holder, you know, he's probably very happy at this point that he has stepped down, because I think there's investigation.
Did he see the handwriting on the wall when the Democrats weren't going to win? Is that maybe why he went ahead and put his resignation in?
That is a definite possibility.
Right.
I mean, why would you want to sit around and, you know, simply, I mean, there's going to be a lot of investigations. There are a lot of things that perhaps were languishing on the Senate side that Republicans wanted that now, you know,
they
are going
to be able to investigate.
Oh, yeah. So it is going to be a much harder time for many of those people in the Obama administration. They're going to be under a much, you know, under a bigger lens that, you know, the House has been looking at them and now the Senate is too. So it's going to be interesting times for them. As far as who knows?
I bet we'll see some pardons. I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and put my neck out there. I think we might see some pardons before the new legislator, the Senate, gets sworn in.
Something. Well, I mean, it could be a very antagonistic relationship that could be coming. I saw some headline. It's kind of like government gridlock 2.0. So, you know, we can hope. Governance is very, very difficult. But you have a president and now a full Congress that don't see eye to eye on a lot. So, you know, I don't know. It's going to be tough. And the political game is, you know, who catches the blame. And so that's, you know, that's,
well, that's one thing
happens.
That President Obama is very good at, shifting the blame. Hey, I tell you what, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Does this make sense? We buy your gold, diamonds, jewelry, coins, sterling silver at the highest prices, paying extra for fine jewelry and quality, and we're always buying your diamonds and colored stones too. But We sell at the lowest prices, from diamonds to gemstone jewelry to sterling silver pieces and antique and estate jewelry. Always lowest prices for quality jewelry. See us today, Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6613.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, 4:48 in the afternoon. Gosh, it's already starting to get dark. Supposed to get dark around 5:30, folks. I don't know. I just don't really like that. And I hate being out in the dark running, Gracie. It's kind of dangerous. But anyways, we're talking politics this afternoon, and we are here with Chad Kinsella. You know, Chad, you and I were just talking about President Obama, the future of the two houses. Will there be any working together? We've got, well, let's see, they'll take the month of December off, right? So,
yes,
you know, we may have a couple, 3 weeks left of work, right?
About that, yeah. So they'll go on recess in December. So they do have a little bit of work left. Kind of a lame duck Congress, but still the Senate will have a lot to do trying to get those nominations through.
Yeah, so that will take probably most of their time.
Yeah, that is at the top of the list probably. That is the last thing that Harry Reid needs to do because, as we were talking about, you know, anybody who does not whose nomination does not go through the Senate at this point, if they languish until the new Republican Senate takes over, I would probably say their chances of being confirmed are zero or somewhere near that.
Somewhere near that. Well, you know, there's other races that were very interesting out there. What other races would you like to, maybe some that had some big surprises for you?
Probably the big one was Virginia. That race, you have Ed Gillespie, who was kind of one of the chairs of the RNC. He was down by 20 or more points coming into the election, and he nearly pulled it out. He came, I think, within 1 point in Virginia of winning. And again, something we had also talked about, he has a very large Rolodex money. Makes a big, so he poured a lot of money into that race. It came very close. And you also have somebody very similar to Pat Roberts. You have Warner kind of was a little bit lackadaisical, got a little comfortable with the fact that he was up by 20 points and assuming that Virginia has, you know, is pretty much at this point a very blue southern state, you know, that he was going to be fine. And boy, is a nail biter by the skin of his teeth.
He won in the end?
He did. There, it depends on who you ask. I think it's a probable Democratic win. I think he was up by somewhere around 13,000 votes, which is a very slim margin. Likely is that he will be at some point declared winner, but they have to go back in and look. But that one was never supposed to be a race at all.
It was a race that nobody was even watching, right?
No, I mean, the big races that were kind of, you know, up in the air were North Carolina and New Hampshire, and even for a while there, Iowa, where you might have, you know, it was kind of unsure who would actually win, and the polls were kind of even. But, you know, Virginia was not even on the radar, and it was a razor-thin margin. And then outside the Senate, you have the governor's races and the House races.
Well, the governor races, they picked up a lot more Republican governors.
The polling, again, I think there's going to be some sort of a blue ribbon committee that is going to probably look at some of the polling because Democrats were supposed to have picked up a lot more governor. They were supposed to have defeated many of those, you know, Tea Party people in Florida several other states. It didn't happen. Florida, Scott ended up winning. Pretty much the only loss, which was not unexpected, was in Pennsylvania. You have Corbett, who was deeply unpopular in Pennsylvania, you know, lost very easily to Wolf. But if you think about, you know, Florida I'm trying to think of some other of the big races.
Well, you think
Ohio.
That was because the Democratic base was not energized? That, I mean, I've heard a lot of talk about the women voting, women that normally would have voted for the Democratic ticket are kind of dissatisfied. They're the ones that look at the budget and have how much money to spend, and they said, no, we're not voting there.
I think there was and again, you can look at South Carolina's numbers, as we kind of already talked about. You know, clearly And again, I don't think the turnout numbers are fully in yet, but there's definitely something that went on with turnout. I think there was some internal Republican polling that the RNC or RNC, one of the Republican committees, and they found that women actually were in favor of Republican candidates by, you know, a majority, maybe a slim majority, but that had not happened. So they had kind of gotten rid of that whole, you know, gender gap that has persisted for a long time. So I think the four key constituencies that the Democratic Party needed to turn out: single women, African Americans, Hispanics, who am I missing in all that? Anyway, one of the others, three key constituents, but anyway, I don't think that they turned out. I think Hispanics might be a little frustrated at this point that immigration reform has not happened. I think, Republicans did a really good job of attracting African-American candidates. You had an African-American in West Texas, a former CIA operative, no less, won.
Well, how about Tim Scott?
Tim Scott, you know,
first elected, in South Carolina.
In South Carolina since Reconstruction. You have Mia Love out of Utah, a very young African-American female win. So,
she was actually a mayor, wasn't she?
She was mayor of, I can't remember the name of the city, but she was a mayor and came very close in 2012 to winning that seat. I think like 100 votes or a couple hundred votes short. So she's now picked up that seat. So some of those key constituencies that, you know, that Democrats and young people is that fourth one I was thinking of. They either didn't show up or, you know, maybe voted perhaps the other way.
You know, what was Lander like pre-election, before the election now? I mean, you have students, you have political students. What were they feeling? Were they energized to go out and vote, or were they saying, I don't know?
You know, there was not. And again, I think the presidential elections and midterm elections are two different, you know, apples and oranges, very, very different. You know, it wasn't a lot.
But they're affected by these midterm elections. Young people are. Their futures, their jobs. Look how many are living at home and haven't gotten the job of their dream, the American dream.
True. So, you know, it was, I didn't get a big sense that there was a whole lot of excitement or interest. And I, you know, you're right. I mean, a lot of, and I tried to talk about this in all my classes. I mean, most of the ways.
They shut Chad down and said, we're not interested. Is that what you're telling me, Chad?
Maybe so. But most of them not. But I mean, it's like, you know, what touches you more often? You know, state and local government. And that was something that was on the ballot.
Sure.
You know, there was very little, you know, little change. You know, and it didn't seem to be much interest around campus. Perhaps maybe I somehow missed all that, but we did have like a voter registration drive, and you have, you know, there was a teacher's organization that came out.
You had a debate over there, I think.
We did have the debate. Molly Spearman didn't make it because she had a death in the family. There was her brother. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, so I mean, there were some things going on, and you know, there were some students involved, but, you know, I never got the sense that there was this, you know, any kind of electricity or excitement about, you know, the governor's race, Senate races, or really the national races at all.
Do they have a Republican and Democratic group on campus?
We haven't had one in a while. We have a political science association, which is nonpartisan, but I know myself and another faculty member, we've kind of been looking to try to start you know, a Democrat and Republican, you know, student association. There has not been, you know, very much interest. I think the last time that there was, it was 2008, which predates me, and we've been trying to get something going on campus, and it has not happened yet. So
that's kind of, to me, it's kind of bothersome that, you know, the young people, they have the right to vote. You know, we look at Afghanistan and Iraq and the Purple Finger and how excited and everything they get about to vote. And here in our own country, where we've had it forever, it is kind of, I have seen more action this election than I have in some of the other elections. I mean, at 9:30 in the morning, out there where I vote, Northwest Fire Department out there, they already had 170 people vote, which was last time, I think, in one of the elections, we had 100 people vote for the whole day. So at that point, they already had 170. So there was that enthusiasm to vote. And maybe it was on the Republican side, maybe because they were tired of the direction of our country. But I think our young people should be even more concerned because it's their future that we're looking at.
And perhaps, I mean, we do a lot of voter registration drives, and we do try, and if again, as much as I'm talking here, I'm very enthusiastic about this. And we, Lander, to their credit, we had yesterday off so that people could go, students could go and vote. And I, again, tomorrow I'll have to let you know, I'll do kind of an informal poll in some of my classes and kind of try to find out, you know, I wonder how many people did vote.
And let's hope it's a good number, Chad.
Yeah, let's hope so. But I mean, really, if you look at you know, numbers, especially in midterm, you know, this is not a Lander problem. This is a United States
right,
youth
exactly.
problem, where you know, not a high turnout, not a lot of young people vote. I mean, and really, we've talked about the Obama effect and stuff, but really, still, even in 2008, where we said that was the year of the young voter, you know, still. You know, much lower than every other age group. It was kind of a brief uptick, and since that time, it has gone back down a little bit.
You know, I was wondering, they did a big Facebook, you know, I voted, and people were supposed to put on Facebook that you voted and everything. I was wondering if that had any effect on people in general, and maybe more on the younger people.
You know, I didn't even hear. Now, to be fair, I don't have a Facebook page. I have to rely on my wife to kind of do all the Facebook stuff.
But she likes what I do on Facebook.
You know, yes, she always goes on, and she definitely goes on, and she likes interviews, and she always goes on and gives me a like when.
Right.
She's trying to boost my morale, and she lets me know. But it was she does those likes and everything like that, and I try to encourage, you know, I kind of go on there, and she kind of shows me different things, you know. Well, it was interesting. I was reading an article the other day. It was kind of like the group Rock the Vote and some of the celebrities that they had on, and they went back and checked to see if they had actually, you know, some of these people who were doing Rock the Vote voted, and many of them had not in the previous election. So you have these kind of, you know.
It really is voter apathy. And you know, we're going to run over here just a second because I want to tell you my ID. I'm going to say the ID and then I'm going to tell you my ID. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. You know, one of the things that I've been trying to think, how we could have more of a competition of getting people involved in voting. One of my ideas is maybe from the Voter Election Commission or something, that we could take the state of South Carolina by county and percentage wise. You know, maybe you have a large market, medium, and small market, and maybe they could issue some grants or something for the most people that voted within each county and run a little competition to get things jazzed up here.
You know, there have been a lot of things. One of the good things that South Carolina has done is a online voter registration, which is new, mm-hmm. which I think is great. You know, was it Oregon, Colorado, and several other states do, you know, mail voting.
Colorado was the first, I think is the first one this time that they've mailed them out.
Yeah, this is the first time Colorado did it. Oregon's done that for a while. There was actually a book, and I can't remember, it was on youth voting. And I think basically the conclusions of the book, if I recall, basically we know that the youth don't vote, and there really isn't a way, they haven't really come to a clear-cut conclusion as to why not and how to get them to vote. And I think the kind of concluding chapter was, maybe we should just make voting mandatory. And I don't see that happening in the United States. But I think Arizona actually, I might be wrong on the state, but if I recall, Arizona for a while had, it was kind of like if you went to vote, you were entered kind of in a lottery where you could win,
yes.
you know, a significant amount of money. And I think that they did some analysis of that, and there wasn't really a big it didn't do anything to try to it didn't do anything to get,
so not even self-interest would generate people to get out and vote.
One of the big arguments was that if you had, you know, same day registration and voting, North Dakota and I think Maine and maybe one other state have that, and I don't think that their voting is, you know, significantly higher or lower, but you know, than anybody else. So that's kind of one of the you know, that is kind of one of the great mysteries, I think. And there's a lot of people who've tried to study this in political science, you know, this voter apathy and why not. And they've targeted, you know, voters, you know, they know the voters who don't, but by and large, you know, it's very difficult to kind of overcome this apathy outside of forcing everyone to vote, which I don't see happening in the United States.
Me either. Well, listen, Chad, it's always a pleasure to have you come on. I think we've had a good conversation here, covered a lot of ground. I don't know what anybody's gotten out of it, but I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
I have definitely enjoyed it, and it's always great to come on an award-winning show. It's always fun to talk politics with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Chad Kinsella. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. That's going to do it for WCRS. Have a great evening. We'll be back in the morning, so stay right here on your favorite radio station, WCRS. That's 1450 AM. Bye-bye, everybody.